I'm your host, Matt McBrayer, from Roaring Fork Help Desk, in studio with Jacob Sarver, a guest host for today.
Hello.
He's a former student of Yampa Mountain High School and works with me in the tech field. So we saw that the SpaceX launched their first military spy satellite today. We don't really know what it is.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see exactly what SpaceX succeeds in launching in the next couple of years.
But another successful landing for them.
For sure.
If you'd like to call in and get your tech questions answered, 963-2976. If you're a little further out, 970-963-2976. So tell us a little bit about yourself and your in the tech world.
Well, I've been in the tech world for quite a while now, doing various things either personal or professionally, and really got my start in Linux and software design probably a few years ago, and then started working with Matthew here.
Excellent. So you said you were looking at some net neutrality things coming up with the FCC. You want to elaborate on those a little bit?
Well, you know, in general, the FCC right now is planning on terminating a lot of their previous policies that protected the internet as a whole, including some of the price limitations on broadband for schools and other organizations. And
All right. Well, let's see here. Was there any? What else was there? I'm trying to remember now. So I saw that Karita 3.1 was released today. So it's a drawing, something similar to Photoshop. If you want to check it out, it's but it's more focused on digital painting, and there's some really amazing pieces of work that have been put out there with that. So go check out Karita. It's part of the KDE suite of software tools for Linux, and it's available on Mac, Linux, and PC. Wait, yeah, that's right. Yeah, the whole thing. So what else, what kind of projects have you been working on lately?
Lately I've been working with you and John on a e-commerce website, and additionally I've been doing some work for C programming and AI, really.
All right. So you said it's kind of a side thing. You've been picking up some older computers and refurbishing them and sending them out. How's that been going?
Oh, typically I'll pick up like a collector type of computer, or old Mac, old PC, something like that, and repair any broken pieces on it and resell it for a significantly reduced cost to anybody who wants it, rather than letting these computers end up in a landfill.
Yeah, so we were talking about that when you dropped over and picked me up, about how consumer products are designed, you know, to a price point and sometimes have planned obsolescence within within that price range. So it's like, you know, they put in parts that, you know, don't necessarily have the specifications to last a really long time. And so, you know, the companies that produce these items have become very good at, you know, figuring out how built down they can build it and still have a, you know, a 1 year or 2 year warranty. And then after, you know, 26 months or something like that, it's really, you know, kind of game over for it. Some planned obsolescence in there.
Oh, yeah, and that's almost definitely intentional on their part. Designing a machine that is within reasonable cost for your typical consumer is definitely their highest priority, rather than making it last for 10, 15 years. So there's always little parts on them that can be replaced fairly easily, and then the computer can be put back into service and last another 3 or 4 years.
All right. So you're listening to Geek Speak on KDNK 963-2976. Call with your questions, and we're getting a call. You're on the air with the geeks.
Hey, you might as well get his feet wet.
Yeah.
This is Craig and Rifle. We chat on and off.
Oh, yeah.
Old friend of Lou's. I've got something that comes up on a Windows 7 platform, a WLM C7C8 temp that goes into and automatically goes into the, for better word, the 86 file.
Well, what do you mean by the 86 file? Like, it gets deleted, or?
Well, it goes into that file, the recycle bin,
mm-hmm.
and then but there's nothing in it. This happens almost every day. Have you ever seen anything like that?
Okay. You're saying you're right clicking on it and saying move to recycle bin or delete.
No, well, you see it in the recycle bin. Like, you know, if you've got the recycle bin up on your screen, it'll either be empty or it'll show something in there.
Mm-hmm.
And so you click on it, and then you open it, and this is the one that was in today. And it's very common that Windows Live Mail for C7 or C8 is, I believe, 4, 7, or 8. And then it just says TMP, but more often than not, there's nothing in it. And then you delete it out of there, and the next day it's back in.
Does it have it's like maybe a 6 or 8 digit random code, and then it says .temp on it, and it's a folder?
No, the whole thing is WLMC7C8.temp, and that was it.
Hmm. Well, because that sounds like there's some Windows Live Mail is doing some some sort of temporary file to do some work in to save, you know, information outside of memory, and then it's putting in the, or, well, it shouldn't be working out of there, but usually those are kept in a temp folder and you never see them, but for some reason it's going into your, I'd have to see if that's a normal behavior of Windows Live Mail. I mean, it's kind of an older program at this point, but did this start happening recently, or has it been doing this for quite a while?
No, this has gone on for a year or better.
All right.
And I just go and click on recycle bin, open, there's the file, and then empty.
Does it take up any space? Does it say like 0 bytes, or does it say like, you know, 10 megabytes or a gig? Or
Pretty much zero.
So it's always like 4 kilobytes or zero or something like that. Yeah, that must be some temporary file that Windows Live Mail is using. I don't know why it'd be putting it into the recycle bin as opposed to just outright deleting it instead. So I'm not sure.
Well, I just thought I'd ask if it's something you had ever seen. It does not do it on any other of my Windows 7 or Windows 8 or Windows 10 platform, only on one particular HP laptop.
Interesting. Would you give me the file name one more time?
WLMC7C8.tmp.
.tmp. Hmm. Well, Google just gave me a blank stare on that one, so it's just a randomly generated file name, and for some reason it's going in there. I wouldn't.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I got when I looked it up, and it did. One little article addressed potential DLL files, but they wanted me to download a program to clean everything up, which of course we don't do.
Yeah, there's particular cleaning files or cleaning programs that we use, and there's a whole lot of those that are just basically a scam.
Sure.
So you have to be real careful on which one you choose for that.
Well, yes, and I am very careful.
All right, great.
From years of listening to you guys.
That's the way to do it.
So.
Yeah, you can definitely reduce the problems you have with that when you make sure you find reputable companies and listen to GeekSpeak.
Yeah, that's a fact. Okay, thanks.
All right, thank you, Craig. You're listening to Geek Speak on KDNK. We have a few more minutes here, so call in with your questions or qualifications or anything that you would like to talk about. 963-2976. So it's getting to be spring again. So had some thunder snow a few weeks ago, and we're gonna have probably some regular thunderstorms here shortly. So I wanted to talk about UPSs and and surge suppression tool, or you know, surge suppressors for a little while. And so so when you're talking about voltage here, the municipalities and the other companies, you're getting, 110 to 120 volts AC on your lines. And so, all your devices are expecting to get, somewhere in that voltage range. And so you have two types of situations where the input voltage is either higher. So that's called a voltage spike. So that'd be something like inducted current from a lightning strike or a direct lightning strike. And so you have something that has to channel off that voltage so it doesn't go into your Lenovo device or into your device and destroy it. And then you have the other problem, which is harder on the power supplies, where it's a brownout, where it drops below the specified voltage. And, you notice that your light's dim. That's a brownout, not a blackout. And that's really hard on your power supply components. So you need to look at using a UPS. Jacob, do you use a UPS on your equipment or just some of it?
Anything at my desk is hooked up to a UPS for sure. Anytime the power goes out and you lose a file, that's terrible, especially if that file's making you money.
So what kind of do you use a line interactive power supply, a double conversion power supply, UPS, or a standby system?
So I just have a standby system, and I picked up a cheap one from Walmart, actually. I actually don't know a whole heck of a lot about it other than it works.
So the lights go off and you're still there with your three or four monitors going, and
at least for a few minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, those little ones won't last very long there. Especially if you're close to their power rating, they usually only give you about 90 seconds to 5 to 10 minutes, even on the long part of that, if you're running high end equipment on them.
Yeah, but it's enough time to save your work and actually shut down the computer rather than losing whatever you were doing.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you have any anything on your incoming, like Comcast cable or phone lines to do voltage spike reduction?
Well, we don't actually have any phone lines, but on the cable side, it's all Comcast equipment that has something built in, supposedly.
Yeah, many of them will take a little bit of a voltage spike. Luckily, they're buried, so it's a little harder for them for the voltage spikes to get into those. So, any other interesting things you wanted to talk about? All right. So, guess not. You're listening to Geek Speak on KDNK, 963-2976. So it looks like Facebook's been working with advertisers to target certain types of people with certain ads. You're listening to Geek Speak on KDNK.
Hey, Matt, it's Donna. How are you?
Doing well, and yourself?
Pretty good. Hey, I'm in Dayton, Ohio this week, but I did want to call in and make a comment or ask a question, something that you might want to talk about.
Sure.
For people who travel, especially internationally,
mm-hmm.
well, specifically for people who travel internationally, you know how on your some people get mixed up between whether or not they have to use a transformer
mm-hmm.
or a converter. And specifically, what's really nice is that the Apple computer equipment, like the Apple chargers, you don't need to use a converter, just the adapter. Do you know what I mean?
Right. So if you look on a lot of, in particular, laptop power supplies, if you look on the back of them, it'll say input voltage. And so it'll say something like 100 volts to 240 volts, which means that's an auto switching power supply. So the only thing you really need for that is an adapter that goes from whatever plug the power supply needs. And then it'll also say 50 or 60 hertz. On there, so it'll say the voltage range, and it'll say 50 or 60 volts. Those are the two very common frequencies that power will use throughout the world. And so if you have a universal power supply like that, you just have to find the appropriate adapter for it, for the plug type that you're going to.
So it makes it nicer because then you don't really have to carry, you know, one of those big converters. You just have to, you can just get one of those little tiny adapters. It makes it kind of nice. But the other thing is that when in doubt, if you can always charge your phone on the, you know, on your USB port of your computer if you need to, if you travel with your computer.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the other thing is my HP laptop that I use at work is the same way. Like that, the you're correct in that the power brick says on there such that you could tell that you can use it in Europe. So that kind of makes it nice. You don't have to travel with that extra thing. But a lot of people don't know. However, the one thing that you typically do have to use a converter for are things like your hair dryers and things like that.
Yeah, anything that has the little tag on it that says, you know, 100 to 120 volts. And then, you know, 60 hertz is you have to get one of the adapters precisely. So the other thing.
So anyway, I just thought I'd bring that up, you know, for people who travel because it is kind of off season there.
And have you looked at the, do you have like a lithium ion battery pack for USB charging that you take with you? Or
I have, you mean like one of those spare chargers?
Yeah, so it's like a little, you know, like cell phone size thing, or some of them are a little larger. Yep. It's kind of a brick size thing that has a array of, you know, batteries in it, and then it has, you know, two or three or four USB ports on it.
Oh, my! The one that I have just has one that you just use. It's like an extra charger for your cell phone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of really cool versions of those that are out there. I have a small one that has a charger on one side and it's a flashlight on the other, so you can use it as a flashlight and as a cell phone charger. And that comes in very handy.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
And how do you charge it? Do you charge it in your, like, USB port?
Yeah, it has a, let's see, I think it has a micro USB port on it, so you'll just plug it into one of your chargers for your phones and charge it up, and then it'll give me about 70% of a charge on my Galaxy S5.
Yeah, that's really nice. So anyway, you know, thanks for talking about that. I thought that was an interesting topic. People might be traveling soon. So anyway, when in doubt, you know, if you're not sure, you can use the, you know, transformer or the converter, but you should be able to safely use all the Apple computer, and if they are truly Apple chargers, right?
Yeah.
You should be able to use those in Europe with just the little adapter, which a lot of hotels have those little adapters that you could borrow. So anyway, okay, we'll all listen to the rest of the show. Thank you,
Matt. All right, thank you, Donna. Take care.
Okay.
Donna Dalton, our correspondent from Ohio today instead of California. So what do you think about the additional delivery trucks for all the e-commerce sites? Yeah. Well, it looks like it's a problem. So many people are using non-brick-and-mortar websites that there's, you know, about a 17% increase in total shipping costs for going around the United States.
Oh, yeah. I can't imagine USPS or UPS would have a very good time trying to keep up with all the increased amount of shipping that's been going on, especially during the holiday season. Everything's already delayed. And people are only buying more stuff online.
Looks like if you have a Google account, you can go into account settings, and then you can look at a location called My Activity, and it'll show you all this, the data logging that Google does on your account.
Yeah, honestly, I recommend you turn a good portion of that stuff off. I have most of it off myself. And they track a lot of stuff. Anytime you ask your voice assistant a question, it has a full voice recording of that, and it keeps track of your location most of the time as well.
I know. Although I do find that I use Mile IQ to keep track of my mileage. So I just have an app on my cell phone called Mile IQ, which is unfortunately now owned by Microsoft. But it does work really well. I just drive around and I tell it what car I'm in, whether it's personal use or if it's business use. It works really well to keep track of that for me. So is there any like particularly interesting my activity things? I haven't had a chance to look at it yet. Or
You mean that Google keeps track of?
Yeah, is there anything?
I mean, a lot of it, we already generally know that they keep track of it. All your web history is going to be in there. All your searches on Google are going to be in there. All your emails. Some of the interesting stuff that I saw last time was it was keeping track of orders that I made on Amazon or whatever, and it would tell me information about them, like what I was ordering, when, and where. Even though my Google account, even though Amazon's a separate company, Google still knows what you're ordering.
Oh, that's wild. All right, have a few more minutes here. You're listening to Geek Speak on KDNK, 963-2976. So I've seen a couple articles over this over the last couple of months, and there's a surge in print books over ebooks. How do you prefer to consume your books? Do you like to use an e-reader? Do you like to use a tablet, or do you like a physical copy of the book?
Personally, I actually prefer a physical copy of the book much to an e-reader. I don't know why. It just something about having the book in my hands feels nicer to me. And apparently a lot of people agree with me on that.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. I've purchased a number of Robert A. Heinlein books over the last several years. That's my, just kind of, reading in the evening kind of thing. And I do so much reading on the computer that it's nice to have a book in my hand as opposed to looking at one of the numerous screens I have.
Yeah, I spend all day looking at a screen anyways. Might as well give my eyes a break. It's bad for them.
Well, let's see here. Is there anything else interesting that we want to talk about today? So, have you kept track of Tesla at all, or Elon Musk, or?
A little bit. I mean, he shows up in the news a lot.
Yeah. What do you think of his gigafactories and his?
The factory design is actually quite interesting. There was some information on exactly how it's laid out, and they are some of the largest factories in the world for producing lithium ion batteries specifically. That in itself is a very impressive feat.
Have you looked at the solar roof panels that they're working on? I saw a real cursory thing about them 5 or 6 months ago, and I haven't heard much about it since then.
I think those are still to be released, or like we're supposed to be getting a release date at some point. I'm not quite sure on that one. But they were a little interesting in just some of the concerns that haven't been answered about them. I mean, they are roof tiles, but are we going to have special equipment in our roofs to keep the tiles cool, or,
I was more interested in how to transfer the electrons on those. Like, how do you wire those all together? Seems kind of interesting. You've been listening to Geek Speak on KDNK. I'm your host, Matt McBrayer, with Roaring Fork Help Desk, in studio with our guest, Jacob Sarver. You're listening to Geek Speak on KDNK. Have a great evening, everyone.